Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the podcast. Here's your next midweek miracle episode and my guest, Aaron Ryan. I got along with Aaron like crazy, and it's not just because he's into science fiction, which, you know, that did help, but it's also because he is an author, and all of you know pretty much that I got kicked out of the library in eighth grade because I just, you know, couldn't seem to stop reading books. So when I get to interview an author as prolific as Aaron, I jump on top of that. What I think is especially interesting about Aaron is that this writing bug got him when he was really young. When he was in second grade, he was tasked with writing a creative assignment, a fictional book. And I'm getting this from his website. It says, "And thus the Electric Boy was born. A simple novella full of intrigue, fantasy, and seven-year-old wits that kind of, you know, put a fire under Aaron, and he realized, hey, this is what I want to do." We have such a great conversation about AI, about his writing career. He's a voice actor. And then he tells two incredible stories near the end where he survived a near-death experience. And as you'll hear, Aaron is funny. He's wise, he's full of mischief, and I think that's the imagination in him, that trickster energy that's constantly reshaping this universe. So yeah, let's get into it, my interview with the incredibly talented Aaron Ryan.
I wasn't swimming, I was with a friend in 1990, I believe, in Mexico, in Mazatlan. And my friend dared me 20,000 pesos to dive off a rock and swim in the Pacific Ocean out to a little peak that was up above the water. But I dove out, is maybe 100 feet, whatever. I dove out, swam out to the rock, turned around, and I couldn't believe how far away the land looked. I've been on stage, but I always feel a little bit out of my own skin and just kind of not uncomfortable or not comfortable in my own skin. I've been a music performer on stage and I always feel like, what am I doing here? I'd much rather be in a studio, but where people can't see me. So I am a dad. I am a husband. I am a voice actor and an author, and I'm a Christian. And those are probably the five most defining things about me. The father thing didn't really come into play until 2016. So I got to add that one to my, it's not really a resume, but those five things is probably who I'd be. My kids are my life's greatest accomplishment. I love them so much. I am so proud of my boys. They're 10 and 6. And my wifey and I started a little bit late in life, probably about a generation later than most people. So we don't fit in any boxes whatsoever. But we look terrible on paper, my wife and I, but it's like there's a lot of redemption in our marriage. She would be, if she was sitting right here, she would say the exact same thing. We look terrible on paper, but we are, there's a lot of redemption in our marriage, and our boys epitomize that. So those are my five, and I'm sticking to it.
Okay. I love that. I appreciate it. I like your candor and just coming out of the gate strong. You're coming out of the gate strong. I love it.
Right, too.
Let me ask you, you are on stage, you're a musician. What do you play? How did that happen?
I'm a vocalist. That's why it's so hard. I remember, my first memories of singing and being attracted to singing was I've always been not so much anymore. I mean, I still appreciate the music, but I used to be a huge diehard Michael Jackson fan. And we're going all the way back to when he was a little boy and sang Ben. From the movie soundtrack of the same name. And so I was sitting, this is a total future, you know, foreshadowing of why I don't like being on stage and having people look at me. I didn't want anyone to see me singing this song. So I told my parents, I want to sing and, you know, well, you should sing something for us. And so I sang Ben by Michael Jackson from around the corner in the kitchen. I was sitting on the countertop while the rest of the four members of my family were all, you know, seated on the couch in the living room around the corner and out of view. And I was out of view. So I couldn't have any eyeballs on me and I could deliver the song without feeling, you know, self-conscious. But I loved it. And there have been times where I felt like, man, I love this song and this is my song. And it just kind of comes to life. And thus I come more to life on stage when I sing it. But I'm barely even comfortable doing public speaking unless I just hit a groove right from the start. And then it's like, okay, now it's smooth sailing. But a lot can ride on those things. And so they're just a little nerve wracking more than I like to tolerate, I guess.
Well, I mean, I think it's interesting. Voice is a big thing for you, right? With singing, with, you know, obviously you're an author, so you're using your voice, and then you're a voiceover actor. But as you said, AI is kind of getting rid of that. And I frankly can't believe that. And it annoys me and makes me sick to my stomach. It just like, I will always want to, you know, actually listen to another human being speak, because human beings can convey emotion and sentiment and feeling in ways that I think machines will never be able to. Plus there's a way of, I don't know, when you listen to someone's voice, for me, there's a way of connecting also that is pretty profound. So, you know, here you are, you're singing this song, you're a kid. Do you think to yourself, this is what I want to do the rest of my life?
I did. Yeah, I did. And I, as such, I followed that path. I did write a story and, you know, I was 7 or 8. It was an assignment we were given by Mrs. Walker in second grade. Hi, Mrs. Walker. And I loved that. I loved telling a story. And I was in a young authors club, which I had completely forgot about. My mom provided some articles, which I still have. And it blew my mind. I saw the articles and went, oh my gosh. And the memories come flooding back. Of course I'm an author. I was in a young authors club. I was like, of course. I had forgotten all about that. But I mean, it was a long time ago, and I'm so old now, so I don't remember it. But I did start with authoring, and then I ventured into singing, and I was really far more captivated for a long time about singing, and I was very good at it. I mean, I'm going to say that confidently, not boastfully. I could do the Mariah Carey, you know, multi-note turns and scales, and not those, you know, where she sounds like she's be like punctuating the atmosphere. I couldn't go that high, but I loved making music, and I loved making CDs, and I loved creating this legacy behind me of all of these creative works. Every major vocation I've had in my life has always been about storytelling in some form or another, and leaving a legacy behind me in my wake. So I did know that's what I wanted to do, but I never quite grew into my own skin where I was, you know, like, hey, I'm on stage and let's do this. You know, it just always felt a little awkward. So, yeah.
My whole life is felt awkward, so I'm right there with you.
Pound.
Yes. Fist bump. I'd love to ask, now behind you, and the listeners can't see this, there is a wall of books that you've published. Sci-fi, fantasy, what genres do you embrace? Yeah.
I try to embrace all of them. I'm actually writing my first horror book, although I published 6 books that are an alien invasion saga, and the very genre connotes horror. It's often, you know, assigned in the horror category. It is sci-fi, but it's maybe sci-fi horror. And I did some tips of the hat to Stephen King in the Dissonant saga, for sure. I mean, Stephen King, yeah, who's that? Big horror author. So I'm making my foray into horror, or my foray into horror, to make a dad joke. And you should list that as 6, definitely a dad joke cracker. So yeah, add that there. I like to do all of them. I mean, I really, my genre and my wheelhouse and my preferred direction is always going to be sci-fi. I'm a sci-fi nerd, and I like sci-fi more than any others. I like fantasy as well. But behind me, for the listeners too, there's a spread of maybe 36 or 35 books, whatever. There's sci-fi, there's some nonfiction, there's some business guides, there's poetry, there's some children's books and fantasy, and my current WIPs. And I just, I'm predominantly going to belong and default to sci-fi. That's where I feel most grounded. That's where I feel I most belong. I will say as a free confession that these children's books that are below me and to my right over here, those would not exist in all likelihood if it weren't for having my own sons. I have 10 and 6 year old boys, and that's why I wrote some children's books.
I love that. Wasn't that how Tolkien, he wrote The Hobbit for his kids?
He did.
Yeah.
Yes, he did.
Yeah. See, you never know when this kind of magic is going to hit and you can create good things for other people. There's always opportunity for that. Okay. Because I'm a sci-fi aficionado, do you have some favorite sci-fi authors?
Well, for those who are not watching right here, I've got the ring around my neck on the necklace on a chain. And just to be clear, this is not the One Ring. See, I'm still here.
You're not disappearing.
I'm not disappearing. Putting my finger through the ring does not make me disappear. I absolutely love Tolkien. Tolkien is who inspired me to become an author. And I read the Hobbit as a kid, and it's very elementary when it is stacked up against the Lord of the Rings and furthermore, the Silmarillion. It is very elementary. I'm not in love with the Hobbit. It's a great children's tale. I am absolutely in love with this 15-year odyssey that Tolkien took to write Lord of the Rings. It is so robust. The world building is so immense. The characters and the narrative and the stakes are just, I love them. And I'm actually reading it again right now, not right now during this interview, but right now. Absolutely love it. So love him, love some John Grisham. I love me some Suzanne Collins big time. She inspired me to write first person present tense. It's more active voice. I love the Hunger Games and what she wrote there. Marie Lu. I grew up reading Tolkien, of course, but also C.S. Lewis and Madeline L'Engle. Graduated to Tom Clancy. And I should say, you can't graduate from Tolkien. That is the graduation. But I evolved, let's say that, to reading John Grisham and Tom Clancy and some Stephen King. And of course, Dave Barry. I love Dave Barry. He's a satirist and has a column in the Miami Herald. I love his satire. And that inspired a satirical book of mine as well. So lots of influences.
I love that. You know, I grew up, loved Madeline L'Engle in that series, as well as, you know, some of her nonfiction autobiographical, The Summer of the Great Grandmother, really beautiful work. But as a kid, my very favorite was Susan Cooper, The Gray King, Green Witch, Silver on the Tree, The Dark is Rising, her Dark is Rising series, which is just almost for me on par with Lord of the Rings. Hope you don't find that blasphemous. But today I love, you know, Shishin Liu, of course, The Three Body Problem is one of the most intelligent trilogies I've ever read. And then, oh my gosh, I can't think of her name, but she's a Brooklyn based African American author. And I feel terrible that I'm forgetting her name, but I haven't had enough coffee. Anyway,
are so many.
Yes, I know. And we're so lucky that we live in a time where we can have such ready access to incredible literature and sci-fi and, well, whatever you want, frankly. So you have in your profile that you, and this is not to put you on the spot, okay? Not putting you on the spot, I hope. That one of your series has been adapted for the screen and it's being pitched. How exciting is that? Or is it stressful?
Oh, not at all. I could care less.
Okay, good.
Okay. It's every indie author's dream, right? To see your work being considered. As an author, we enjoy the rich privilege every single day of being spammed and scammed by, you know, multiple emails and multiple attempts from Nigerian boiler rooms everywhere. It is so infuriating and so frustrating. And I get them all the time, upwards of 30 a day. And I just try to, filter them out, block them, and you never reply. That's the one counsel I would give is don't ever, 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 ever reply to these people. But we can address that later. But so I did get an email from an assistant to a Hollywood fellow. He's accredited. I don't know what Hollywood fellow means, but it's something in the Hollywood system. He is on IMDb. He is vetted. He's won awards. And it puts me literally, working with him, puts me literally 3 degrees away from James Cameron. I mean, whoa, so exciting. And my favorite movie of all time is Aliens, Sigourney Weaver, 1986. So that's James Cameron all the way. I'm like, oh, just it was like, you know, take me now, you know, cuff me and take me. That sounded weird. Strike that. Anyway, James Cameron, though, is he's just a genius. So I love his movies. But anyway, I found his listing and I vetted him and I did my due diligence. One of the things, and I can't name him because every time I do, he's kind of like, can you not? Because I just, okay, yeah. I name him and people flock to him and they say, here's my book and here's my book, adapt mine. And he's like, not every book deserves to be adapted for the screen. So I was very fortunate in that regard. I did get the email though. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, sure. Uh-huh. Yeah. You are who you say you are. Uh-huh. Wink, wink. But I did the research. I talked to them. He wanted to do a Zoom chat, which I thought, well, that's different. Why would a scammer, you know, want a Zoom chat? And so I was like, he was looking more legitimate more and more as we went along. His price that he quoted, this is his livelihood. He, you know, charges for this. It was commensurate with what it takes to adapt a film to screen and market it. I don't have the foggiest clue who to market to in the Hollywood system. No idea. He talks to producers all the time. He works with them. He's had his own screenplay, has won awards. So I was in good hands, and he was very collaborative. So he made two big changes. We would meet weekly. He made two big changes in the screenplay that did not reflect two major components of my book. And I was just like, oh, and he control Z'd those, thankfully. And I was very grateful for that. But he's out there pitching it right now. I think he's pitched to probably 15 different studios, none of which have said no yet. They're all considering. And that's so exciting. And this is for Dissonance Volume 1 Reality, the first in my Alien Invasion saga that I wrote. So stoked. And then I've had others adapted for the screen. I'm having two more adapted. These are Fiverr professionals who do this. And I've entered those into the film festival route. And they're getting in and they're winning awards. So I'm excited for that too.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That's awesome.
Thank you.
I mean, I think inspiration, hard work, diligence goes a long way. And never giving up, you know, never giving up. I'd love to ask this question because I love science. I've loved science since I was a kid. I'm really, you know, I read all sorts of books about anything that interests me scientifically. And lately I've been on a consciousness kick and, you know, they're trying to figure out what consciousness is. And sort of a general consensus is emerging is that it's within and without us, you know, consciousness is everywhere. But I recently listened to a podcast that posited this, and I thought it was so fascinating because it explains to me what happened when Darwin came up with his idea of evolution, and then thousands of miles away, an entirely different person came up with almost the same thing. He just didn't publish as fast as Darwin. And it goes also back to Plato's, you know, idea or theory of ideas, like a realm of shapes, a realm of ideas. I recently listened to a podcast that posited that inspiration, ideas, concepts, creations exist out there in the world, and that they're all around us. And every once in a while they find someone and they're like, oh, this person will bring me out. This person will bring me into the world and give me life. So I'm wondering what your thought is on inspiration, the muses, this realm of ideas. I'd love to hear what you have to say about that.
That's so interesting. I mean, existential stuff. I have Pixar brain. I have 10 and 6 year old boys. So I have Pixar brain. So existentialism is a little bit, you know, over me, but one of the things I found myself saying, and this every author I think would resonate with this, this sentiment that we just hope we get the good stories. You know, you hope that you get the good ones. And I feel very blessed and anointed. I'd go so far as to say anointed to have written Dissonance, because I wanted to write a trilogy. I had no idea that it would just balloon and it would burgeon so much that it required two prequels and a sequel. So I had a hexalogy on my hands before I even knew it. There was so much story to tell. It just kept wanting to come out like an alien queen. It was trying to burst out of me. But less violent, of course. I just love that story. I'm so grateful. However, as much as I felt like that story chose me, and it's so funny that you asked this question, because art really imitates life, and the lines between fiction and reality really become blurred. Today is the birthday of the protagonist of my first prequel in the Dissonance series. His name is Andrew Shipley, and I have his birthday on my real life Outlook calendar. I have all of the main characters' birthdays on my real life Outlook calendar. And I just posted something to this effect that, you know, he's a war hero. He's husband to Melissa. He's father to blah, blah, blah. And you just celebrate them. They're so real to you because you've been so really impacted. However, as a Christian, I really struggled with the marginal profanity that I incorporated in Dissonance at times of extreme duress. I'll never use the F-bomb. I'll never take the Lord's name in vain, GD or JC. I'll never have graphic sex or bullying or drugs. I just don't do that. I don't need it. And my readers don't need it. But I felt convicted about, you know, using even SHIT. You know, here comes a Gorgon. He's going to eat me. And it's sparse, but convicted. So after I was done, I really felt the Lord calling me to write clean Christian fiction. And I felt absolutely called to write The End, which is a Christian dystopian saga. It's a trilogy. And it is, you will cry. It is loaded with redemption and heart and thematic depth and scripture. And it's like, it's powerful. I dare say it turned out more powerful than Dissonance did. But I feel chosen by both. So yeah, really long answer, but chosen by both for sure.
Beautiful, beautiful. I'm like envisioning, because I kind of see the world three-dimensionally. It's hard to explain, but I'm listening to you and seeing all these ideas kind of waiting in line for you. And they're like, okay, hello, when's our turn? You know, and what an abundance of gifts, you know, and blessings for you. How amazing.
Thank you.
You know, because some people, I've certainly, you know, talked to a lot of authors that were like, this was a trudge. This was so hard. And it can be hard. But even for some of them, you know, coming up with ideas is this grueling, arduous, you know, long suffering task. So, it probably is for every author at some point. But, you know, the second question is, did you grow up in a religious household? What did that look like? Mm-hmm. And then as you aged or got older, has that shifted or changed in any way?
Yeah, it's a really good question. Can I hit on something, though, that you just said in regards to, I feel like a political debate, like, well, like I get to answer his point, right? but no, this book right here, this is Blood Echoes. I'm pointing to a cover of a book that I'm working on. This is my current work in progress. The one below it, Daggerfells, is a fantasy novel, is my tribute to Tolkien, and it's not been written yet. And then this one over here is called The Darkness Within. That is another horror novel, and that's not been written yet. But I'm a reverse engineer. I get inspired more cinematically than literally. So what I will do is I'll get a vision of a cover, and if it's so alluring to me, I've got to design the cover. This is just how I work. Not everyone does it this way. And the cover will go through iterations and change as the story evolves. But I'll create the cover first, and that's what will be so inspiring for me to write a story that matches the intensity of the cover. So I work my way backward to the cover. I don't write the story in reverse, but I do work my way backward to that cover. So just anyway, to say the inspiration comes, and that's just how I work. So anyway,
that is so cool.
I had to add that part. But yeah, I did grow up in a religious home. It was more an innocuous mix of Catholicism and Presbyterianism. So not overtly Christian, not non-denominational, you know, evangelical, any of that. Although I think my dad has always been the more spiritual one. No offense to mom. My dad was always the more spiritual one, and he was impacted by the church that I started attending as a kid, which was a Christian church. And I accepted the Lord into my heart when I was, I think, 10, something like that. And of course, you know, you're like, you know, Lord Schmord, and you kind of grow through life and do your own thing. And like, oh, yeah. Oh, I am a Christian. That's right. I forgot. you know, and then you kind of come back to it later on. So that's exactly what I did. And then you get double dipped, you get baptized again, and then maybe again and again. So there you go. I do think, though, that my life, I've always felt a tether. I've always felt loved. I've always felt called by the Lord and felt tethered to his love. And that is in, you know, nothing can separate us from the love of God that is in Christ Jesus, our Lord, the Bible says. So I think it's just become more intense, more personalized, more real and tangible. My prayer life has definitely evolved over the years to something far more relational and less Santa wish listy. And I even wrote a book to that effect. That's right over this shoulder right here. God is not Santa right there. If I can point to it, it's, you got to do everything in reverse when you do this. Cause it's like, which way do I lean? It's somewhere on this board behind me, but yeah, it's just become far more personal and powerful and potent as I've grown. So First John says, I write these things to you who believe in the name of the Son of God so that you may know that you have eternal life. And I know, I absolutely know in my heart and in my mind.
It's, you know, our entire lives are an evolution. Like, we're always changing. And I just think it's fascinating to, you know, to talk to people about how they have evolved, you know, suffered the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune.
Ooh, I love that.
Yes, that is Shakespeare. That was not me. I wish I wish that was me, but, you know.
You should add, as I've always said, you know.
As I've always said. But now you know the secret, so.
I do. The truth is out.
So I am intrigued to talk to you about AI creativity. I'd love to hear your take, because I have a take on why I can't stand it. And I think that it is only doing a disservice to ourselves, but I'd like to hear your thoughts.
Yeah. It's such an incendiary and polarizing topic, as all controversial things are. It's one of those things where it's, there are two quotes and they're by the same guy and they're both fictional characters, but they so apply to AI right now. They're both by, Jeff Goldblum's character, Ian Malcolm, in the Jurassic Park series. And in one, he goes, yeah, but your scientists were so preoccupied with whether or not they could, they didn't stop to think if they should. And I love that quote. And I think it's so applicable to AI. The other one that he says is in The Lost World. And he says, oh, yeah, ooh, ah, that's how it always starts. But later there's running and screaming. And it just feels so applicable to this nascent technology that we're dealing with. It's unregulated. It's a wild west. It is damaging the environment. It's damaging relationships. It's damaging socioeconomic status. It's dumbing down society. It is damaging income and livelihoods. And I'm frustrated. I'm a controlled frustrated, but I'm frustrated. As an author, Well, I'll start as a voice actor because I see it on both sides of the fence and I've been a victim of AI's impact. So as a voice actor, I have seen our income erode. I've seen the industry pay scale erode. I have lost precious longstanding relationships with clients I've worked with for a really long time, producers who have either themselves been replaced by AI. So the studio's decided we no longer need you. We're going to go through C-Dance or whatever. Or they've been given the directive to abandon using human voice talent and instead make use of, you know, also nascent technologies like Speechalo, SpeechOcean, ReSpeecher, 11 Labs. And they fire program their script in there. It spits out a voice. They go, hey, good enough. Let's use it as commercial. Roll with it. And I just can't believe they're doing that because, like you said earlier, AI lacks the human nuance, the human idiosyncrasy. It's not a directable voice, and it is not connective. And you can always, your hairs go up on the back of your neck. You go, play that again? you know, and you're like, that's clearly AI, you know, and it's just, I'm no longer interested. And studies have been done for audiobook narrators and audiobook listeners that they much prefer a human voice, particularly the author's voice to narrate it. So it's definitely impacted the author, the voiceover industry. As authors, man, we're seeing all kinds of schisms develop in the industry. It's pitting author against author. You wrote that with AI. No, I didn't. You know, and how can I even prove this to you? And I didn't, you know, and other people who did, well, why'd you do that? You know, why don't you use your creative gift? So you've got this pitting happening, and schisms developing. It's diluted the quality of the offerings in the marketplace. Yes, Kindle asks a question. KDP asks a question. Did you use AI, you know, to write this story? And you know, hopefully people are answering yes. But I think the worst thing that for me is the fact that it just, and it's also damaging the environment, all the water consumption to cool the servers generated to you know, every, it's like a gallon of water goes bye-bye with every 15 to 50 prompts on ChatGPT. But I think the dumbing down of society is the worst thing that I'm seeing. I love to quote this example. TikTok, I'm watching a reel and it's an aerial view of a coastal town. People are walking along on boardwalk shopping with their Gucci bags, la 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 la, you know, just completely oblivious to this fact that, to the fact that offshore, maybe 50 miles bearing down on the town is this massive tsunami. And they're not even paying attention to it because they're AI, because they can't, you know, and it completely inundates and overwhelms this town and demolishes it. And, you know, I look at that and go, you know, wow, does it look real? Sure. Clearly it's AI and it's not real, but yet you have in the comments, people reading it and going, oh, those poor people, you know, and they're mourning the deaths of these computer generated people. And it's like, if people don't know what to tell, they don't know the difference. And then you have Seedance creating rooftop fights between Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt. And now they're being sued because it's so darn lifelike. And fake trailers for Avengers Doomsday being created. And, you know, they're getting sued by Disney. It's just the misinformation is abounding. The dumbing down of society is abounding. I don't feel strongly about this at all.
Clearly, you're lukewarm on the subject. And it's, wish you would,
I should choose a side.
Well, I would like you to take a stand, sir. So my simple answer is you have to know that I'm like a bit of a mystic in general, just in my life. And I have read my entire life. As I told you, I got banned from the library, but I've always understood connection with spirit and the divine is the most important connection that we have. If we're lucky enough to find it or discover it or be tapped on the shoulder or go looking for it, you know, go on a quest for it, that connection, that communion with something beyond us is so important. I think about, just to illustrate my point with the AI, the Oracle at Delphi and the priestesses that were the voice, you know, people would come with their petitions, their questions, and they would millennia ago access God. Now, you know, they're always doing studies and they now think that, you know, some sort of help in the form of a plant or some sort of chemical was used for them to, you know, kind of access God. But to me, it illustrates connection to source. We've always been looking for it. We've always been searching for it. And, you know, that realm of ideas, that realm of shapes, that realm of creativity, where the muses come from, that is also another sacred connection. It is so essential and so needed in the, I call it the aridity, the emptiness, the sterility of our culture. Facilitating something from that realm of the muses is one of the most sacred acts that we can do. And the fact that there are whole industries now trying to destroy that connection, trying to, you know, make it so easy that we don't even go looking for those energies or those conversations is super disturbing to me.
Yeah. It's being pushed on you at every turn. It's frustrating as well. Comply or die, adapt or die, whatever. It's so frustrating because I get called, and I know plenty of others get called a Luddite, for not embracing this new technology. And then they spring the argument like, you're one of those horses and steam and, you know, horses, and you couldn't adapt when the steam engines came along. And it's like, this is an entirely different issue. Horses don't create. We are creators. It is a God-given gift to create. And when you outsource that to a CPU, you are surrendering something that is inherently beautiful. One of the greatest quotes I ever heard, and I wish I would have noted down who wrote it. It was an editor. I know that. She said, she posted something in her post. Are you using writers? Are you using AI to write? If so, please stop. And then here's her quote. I cannot bring out your voice if it wasn't there to begin with. And it was like, hallelujah. I mean, as authors, Oscar Wilde said, be yourself. Everyone else is already taken. You have to be unique. You have to be. AI is an amalgamation of all of these creatives that have been assimilated in LLMs, and it's trained on the back of creatives from years gone by without any accreditation, remuneration, consent. And so you have to stand out from the herd if you're going to be heard. See what I did there? You have to stand out. And it's frustrating when people are saying, you know, it's not a big deal to use AI. Like, it is a big deal because it's no longer you writing it. It isn't. Now, creative tools that are like AI assisted, I don't have a problem with those. You want to get idea generation, fine by me. That's fine. I've tried it. I didn't like what I got. And I went, I'm just going to go back and use the old noggin. And I liked better what I came up with. I just did. So no. It's still just such a divisive topic.
I'm going to use another Oscar Wilde quote to put a little cherry on the top of this topic, which is, he said, we're all of us in the gutter, but some of us are looking at the stars. And I think that the ones who aren't using AI are the ones that are looking at the stars.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And I forget who said this, but they said, you're the youest you that you can be. The world needs more unique voices. Not like I can't write a novel and expect to I can't expect to mirror J.R.R. Tolkien. I mean, the guy has incredible prowess that I can't even begin to touch, to dream to touch. But a tip of the hat every once in a while, fine. You know, that's paying homage to him. But I'm not J.R.R. Tolkien. I am Aaron Ryan, and that's who I need to be. If you're using AI to write your story, you're not being anyone at that point. You've completely lost your identity. It's been usurped into this pool, this gene pool of authors that you're no longer distinctive. It's really sad.
Yeah. Concur. Two thumbs up.
Promise I'll take a stand soon. I promise.
Okay, good. Good. Cause I'm hating this back and forth. You're waffling.
I know. I'm very, very fickle.
Super bummer. Just to let you know.
So depressing. You're looking forward to a great chat. It just went downhill. Ugh.
Well, you know, it's to be expected. So
yeah.
I'd love to ask you the main question, which is, I would so appreciate you sharing, you know, a story or two stories where you feel like you experienced or witnessed something magical, miraculous, or mysterious.
I was thinking about that. And I think I'd have to say the biggest miracle in my life is twofold. And it is the births of our sons. One is 10 now, one is 6. We started late, and you know, it's a shame that my wife had to bear the terms geriatric and advanced maternal age. You know, it's just so unfair. It's so mean. It's like, come on, she's not a snowflake. She can take it. But it was like, you know, she's in her 30s. She's not in her 60s. Come on. Birth conception is an absolute miracle in and of itself. It feasibly, technically should not even be able to happen. All these, you know, the acids and the amino acids and the proteins and everything have to come. And that's, you know, again, Pixar brain. But the fact that it happens in and of itself is inherently a miracle. To see an older mom have a baby gestate in her womb and carry it to term healthy and have it delivered healthy, and to see that baby now, this one 10 years old and 6 years old. I mean, the 6 years old was even older, 3.5 years after this one. And she was labeled advanced maternal age for this one. It was very risky getting pregnant. So it's an absolute miracle. And it is just, every day is a miracle with them, because I find you can't plan for how utterly diametrically opposed they are. They are the best of friends, but they are so very different. I mean, likes and unlikes, the opposites attract. They're so very different, and you just can't even plan that. He's a back sleeper. He's a tummy sleeper. He's blonde. He's brunette. He's right brained. He's left brained. How do we plan that? We don't plan that. It's like, well, I'd like to. It's not a menu. You can't check things and order the specific things. And it blows me away. So they, in and of themselves, are a miracle. The fact that we had them are miracles. I like to also think that that my being here is a miracle, because I remember. I came very close to death twice in my life. One was during a windstorm in 1999 in Seattle, and I was driving on what's known as Highway 99. It's in Linwood, north of Seattle, and a very large, I believe it was a cedar. I don't know. I'm not an arborist, but this tree fell over on 99 completely across the highway. Not a second after we had passed underneath its decline. We could hear on the roof of my car, what is that? I didn't have a sunroof or anything, but we could hear, well, what is that? Branches and limbs were falling, and the branches were still attached to the tree. You know, the car shuddered, and I hit the gas a little bit more, but this trunk, we could feel the trunk hit the ground and reverberate it in our car. The car went like this, literally looked in my rearview mirror, and this shadow fell across 99 right behind my car. Would have absolutely pancaked my brother and I. And then you wouldn't have the bestseller of Dissonance and, you know, The End and all these fantastic novels that you should run out and buy right away at authoraaronryan.com. I'm sorry, have I said too much? So that's a miracle, right? I can't believe that I survived that. Blew me away. The other one is I was swimming in, or I wasn't swimming. I was with a friend in 1990. I believe in Mexico, in Mazatlan. And my friend dared me 20,000 pesos to dive off a rock and swim in the Pacific Ocean out to a little peak that was up above the water. There was a jellyfish warning. We had seen those signs, but it was like, you know, we don't see any. It's fine. And I'm naturally concerned maybe about sharks, but I'm a dumb kid. I was only 17 years old, I believe, maybe even 16. I can't. No, I was probably 17. But I dove out, is maybe 100 feet, whatever. I dove out, swam out to the rock, turned around, and I couldn't believe how far away the land looked from that little peak. That little peak didn't look so far away, but when I swam out there and turned around, it was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to need, it's a long way. I swam and I tried to ascend the rock. When I got there, there was the land came down in a precipice that stopped. There was a canal and another outcropping of rocks beyond that. And there was a passage of water. Well, I tried to grab this and I tried to grab that. And I put my leg up there and there like a spider. And I was thrown into the canal from a wave that came in and spun me over. And then I don't know what you call the counter wave, came the other way. And then, you know, flipped me back. That way, and head over heels. And I cannot believe to this day that I didn't bash my head against a rock and get knocked out or something like that. But now there's blood in the water because I'm all scratched up on the rocks. And I had no idea what to do. I got away from there because it's unsafe to ascend. And I thought, it's even further to go around this outcropping and swim back to the beach. It's a miracle that there was a guy there he didn't speak any English, but he had a life preserver and he threw it out to me and I got it on, and he and my buddy pulled me up the rock. I stepped on a sea urchin on the way up and got like 30 spines in my feet. Had to have those surgically removed. That was a joy, but God, I can't believe that whole episode that I'm still alive. And it was all for 20,000 pesos, which at the time was like $6.50. It's just so ironic. It's like, he paid me, which is nice. I just want to add that I collected, but it's, that's awful. Just awful.
Yeah.
Miracle.
yeah, miracle. It's never good to have blood in the water when there are possibly sharks around.
No, not a good idea. Yeah.
Wow. I am listening to those two stories. I just want to say that I hate the term geriatric pregnancy. It is so negative. It's just something that doesn't need to be said. And it right. just bugs me. That being said, it's clear from these two stories in Mexico, that whole thing just sounds terrifying to me.
Yeah.
Thank God you were young. I want to say that.
And stupid.
Yeah. Oh, yes. And stupid. Let's remember that. And what happened with that huge tree in a windstorm. I just want to let you know, I lived in Bellingham for about 2.5 years. So long.
Wow.
Yeah. At the end of the 90s, I lived, or mid-90s, maybe. Mid-90s, mid to late 90s. I lived in Bellingham, Washington for a couple of years. I went to Seattle a few times. Yeah. So long ago. So long ago. Before it was kind of like built up and has turned into what it is now.
Before it was windy.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah. Before trees fell.
Yes. So I'm familiar with that little part of the world, but I know what those trees, how big they can get.
Yeah.
And thank God for both of those. And I'm just listening to these stories and I thought to myself, okay, the Almighty has plans for you, obviously, and is like, you know what? You know what? He's going to survive.
Yeah. You live to fight another day. It's any day that that happens. And it's virtually every day because you could have a heart attack any day. You know, I have a 10 and a 6-year-old. I'm on the verge of a heart attack every single day as it is. So, yeah. But I think, you know, honestly, it's like I've been called light in my loafers. I'm okay with it. I absolutely love carrying a sense of levity and joy, and I think it's absolutely indispensable. Laughter is the best medicine. It truly is. And if you can, you know, thumb your what is the expression? Thumb your nose at danger, and not you have to have a gravitas and an appreciation of the danger that you went through and that you maybe overcame. But man, you got to laugh. You have to laugh through life.
Babes, that's it for this episode and my conversation with Aaron. There's going to be all sorts of great little links in the episode show notes. Please do click on through to buy one of the books in his series, or heck, even the whole series. I just love what he's doing, mashing up Christianity and science fiction. I also love his generous way of being in the world, which is to say that he's here to create beauty and art and big ideas and share them with us, all while being tolerant and non-judgmental of how others choose to live their lives. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. Hit that follow button wherever you listen. And then please rate and review, because I would love to get more ratings and reviews. That's how other people find this little labor of love of mine. And here we go. Thank you for listening. And here's my one request. Be like Aaron. Know what you're good at. I mean, Aaron is good at voice acting. He's incredible at writing. He's followed passions of his that kind of were illuminated for him when he was a kid. He's followed this unusual path, and he's committed to his passions. So yeah, be like Aaron and just know what you're good at, live into it, develop that skill that you've got, that kind of heart passion that you've got, and bring your gift to the world. And that, my friends, makes for a beautiful world. See you next time for the very next episode, and I hope that wherever you are in this world, if it's in the Northern Hemisphere, you're staying cool this summer. Aaron, did you just drop the mic and walk away?
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a hazard of your profession. You know, we're tripping over all the mics that you've just put on the ground.
Well, I'm ready to drop another one. If you're going to ask me the final question, which I always get, and I love the final question about what would you tell an aspiring author? If you've got that, I've got the quote all lined up.
Do it.
It is. They're totally mic drop worthy. So, but I love this quote. It comes from a movie I like to pretend does not exist. Star Wars One, The Phantom Menace. I like to just, you know, let's put that one aside. And Attack of the Clones is even worse. But this isn't that kind of podcast. I just, I love the quote that a young Obi-Wan, sorry, actually Qui-Gon Jinn gives to the young Anakin Skywalker. And he says, remember, your focus determines your reality. And when I first watched that movie in 99, I'll admit it, I watched it once. But when I first watched it, you know, right over the head, I think it was 2016. I was revisiting it. And that quote just hit me like a ton of bricks. It was, you know, you're watching the movie and then like, wait, rewind that. Your focus determines your reality. And it just completely impacted me. I was ripe to be impacted by it. Your focus really does determine your reality. I was determined to be a self made entrepreneur and to make $1 million by a certain age. And as and that was my focus, it became my reality. I was determined to be a best selling or not a best selling author yet, but to be a best videographer, corporate and wedding videographer, and to win Seattle's Best of Western Washington Awards. I won it three times. That was my focus. It was my focus to be to make voiceovers my career. And to pay our mortgage and to pay everything, that became my reality. And it used to be super lucrative. That's why it's been so impactful seeing it go like this. And then it was my focus, and it is my focus, to put voiceovers aside, not to be a voiceover artist who also writes books, but to be a novelist who also does voiceovers. That's my focus now. And that will be for the rest of my life, because I see voiceover, the industry, eroding. That's my focus. That will be my reality someday. So there's that one. Your focus determines your reality. The other thing is, as a creator, you can't hang your hat on the acceptance of people to accept every creative thing you put out there. You can't please everyone, nor should you try. The quote that I was given was, someone's endorsement of you, or lack thereof, has very little to do with your trajectory. I love that quote, because if you are a creator and this is what you're called to do and this is your passion, you go forward. Let the negative reviews and the lack of sales and the lack of opportunities to speak and share and all that stuff bounce off you and keep moving forward. Like Rocky talked about to his son in his movie, it's the endorsements or lack thereof. They don't matter. You keep doing you and keep moving forward. Mic drop.
I'd really like you to, it'd be really nice if you could take a stand on AI though, before we go.
A stand on AI. Okay. I don't like it. I don't know if you could hear that, but I pounded really hard on my desk.
Yes, I did. I heard that.
There you go.
Thank you, Aaron.